going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support. Natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie. Today on the ZabeCast, I got into quite a pickle a few weeks ago as a listener and golf buddy invited me to play pickleball. A full report today on one of the fastest growing sports in the country. Also, what's an appropriate comeback song after getting shot? And PayPal decides to lose its ever-loving mind. Your bonus, off the beaten sports past dose of pure me, is locked and loaded. So buckle up and let's go.
Here we go.
Tuesday, October 11, 2022. Thank you for downloading. It is just me today, sort of just me today, with a big chunk of pickleball in the middle. But don't worry, there is some NFL stuff in here, as well as some other content. I know. Pickleball on a Tuesday in the middle of football season when there's baseball playoffs going on. Hey, I've always told you people, this podcast is extra. It's sometimes totally unrelated to the usual sports grind. And I was happy with how the pickleball conversation came out. And I am a pickleball skeptic of sorts. I don't quite get the appeal. I understand the appeal. I just don't get it myself. And I can say that I am not clamoring to go buy a pickleball paddle. Pick a peck of pickleball paddles after this, but I enjoyed the enthusiastic introduction from my friend Steve Halligan. You'll hear from him and his personal instructor, Sonny Tannen, in just a bit. But let's get to it. If you are curious today, I think you'll enjoy it. If you hate it, then just delete and we'll see you on Wednesday. We're going to have Rhodes and Hatch, so we're going to talk lots of football as week 5 will be officially in the books. I'm watching right now. The Raiders and the Chiefs, and oh, looky, the Raiders are about to go up 14-0, first and goal at the 2-yard line. I'll keep you updated as that game progresses. Okay, let's get to a few pieces of feedback real quick, and then some thoughts on the Brady roughing the passer, which I thought was interesting on Sunday. This piece of feedback from, actually I got two emails from two Steves. One Steven in Columbus, Georgia, and one Steve Eisenberger in Columbia, Pennsylvania. I swear to God, these appeared back to back in my email inbox regarding the exact same thing. What are the odds, right? What are the odds? So we'll start with Steven in Columbus, Georgia, big Georgia Bulldog fan, go Dogs. He writes to say, Steed, on Monday's Tony Kornheiser podcast or show, Mike Wilbon, his normal Monday guest, said without explicitly saying that the reason there was a roughing the passer penalty against Atlanta was because Brady is white and he was sacked by a black player. Don't believe me? Go to the 18-minute mark and listen for yourself. I don't have time to do that. I'll take you at your word. He said, quote, the call is more sinister. Brother can't sack Tom Brady. Brother can't hurt Tom Brady. What happened is sinister. I can't wait to hear Jay's take on this. I know he likes Will Bond. Does it matter that a black referee is the one who threw the flag? Thanks, Stephen in Columbus, Georgia. Go Dawgs. That's just embarrassing if that's really Will Bond's honest, earnest take, but okay. Then there's this one from Steve Eisenberger. He says, to your point the other week, Michael Wilbon is that angry old man who is delusional now and can't separate his prejudices from fact. On Tony's podcast today, he said, black defensive players can't hit Brady based on the Falcons call. It's a racial issue? Oh my God. Ask Jay his opinion on this. He also said last week that Northwestern outplayed Penn State. I realize he's a wildcat, but PSU had 119 more total yards, 9 more first downs, and 15 more minutes time of possession. I think they won the game 17-7. Not super impressive, but yeah. Here's the thing. If I'm not mistaken, from what I researched, Mike Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser each make $6 million a year from ESPN. And unlike Stephen A. Smith, who makes $8 million a year from the four-letter, who has to go on all these shows and do all this stuff, and he's run through the car wash every day, like 3 hours on First Take. Wilbon and Tony share a 22-minute show every afternoon. A brilliantly crafted, mind you, and incredibly efficient sports McPinion product. Designed by Eric Rideholm, the executive producer of Pardon the Interruption. In which these two guys, and by the way, has probably at least 5 or 6 producers, assistant producers, researchers, etc., that lay out the whole show, all 22 minutes minus commercials that they're obligated to do, yammer, yammer, yammer. Wilbon himself does not even have to be in D.C. anymore. He lives most of the year in Phoenix, Arizona. I don't blame him. I'd love to do it myself. He makes $6 million. A year, and Wilbon makes $6 million a year. They're sharing half of a 22-minute show. Neither one has to do anything else for their $6 million. Kornheiser does nothing else for ESPN. Wilbon may dabble in the NBA playoffs, but I don't even think he might get paid extra for that. I don't know. It is like winning the lottery year after year after year. I ain't hating. I'm just saying. So it's not surprising then that Wilbon would be completely unmoored from and detached from what we like to call reality. And no doubt, in addition to making $6 million, I'm sure he gets his ass kissed. And nobody's willing to say, really? I think that was a racism-related call, huh? Of course they're not going to say that. Now, Wilbon, in my interactions many years ago, and I haven't interacted with him forever, has been quite pleasant with everybody he comes in contact with. That is one of the great qualities about him. But on the air, on the show, he's become the grumpy old man. And if this take is correct, it's way wildly out of step with reality. But again, he's not living in reality. Neither is Kornheiser. They have won the lottery year after year after year. And they're worth that much money because PTI gets sufficient ratings. They can sell it to advertisers. And really, neither one can be replaced because they're two old grizzled sports writers. One's Jewish and white. The other one's black. Wilbon pretends to be hipper, but he's 63 himself and pretty much lives a sedate golfing lifestyle. He's not in the clubs with the kids. And it just works because of their relationship going back to the Washington Post. But still, that of all the takes that are out there, well, that's one of them. Speaking of the Brady roughing the passer, Greg Auman, A-U-M-A-N, covers the Buccaneers for The Athletic, has covered them for a long time, came out with some numbers in the wake of this Brady hit that went viral. He says the roughing the passer call against Grady Jarrett on Sunday was the first such call drawn by Tom Brady this year. he's drawn one total in all of 2021. Since he came to Tampa in 2020, he ranks 16th among all quarterbacks in roughing the passer penalties. He has a total of six. So obviously the data does not point to any sort of preference for Brady, although it just is bad optics for sure. I got to thinking, okay, well, how does he rate on hit-adjusted RTPs? In other words, he probably didn't get hit a whole lot, so you got to divide the roughing the passer calls over total hits, and that would give you a more accurate ranking. And I think somebody did ask that of Allman, who covers the Bucs for The Athletic, and I think he did parse that out and move Brady up a bit, but it was from like 16th to 9th, so it wasn't a whole lot. Then I start thinking, well, maybe Brady is just better at turtling. Brady at times when he knows that, because he's slower than dirt, that he can't evade a rush, he just turtles up and goes down. So you're not going to get a lot of roughing the passer calls when he's already lying on the ground in the fetal position going, "Yeah, sorry." I also thought, well, maybe defenders know that even blowing on him, touching him in any way is going to be strictly called and likely lead to a penalty. So how many times do defenders pull up short on Brady because they expect there to be a Brady bias? Don't know. But these calls do tend to even out just a bit because earlier in the game, Vita Vea drew a 15-yard penalty for Tampa for roughing the passer on Marcus Mariota. All he did was get pushed from behind by Falcons guard Chris Lindstrom. And then Vea just bumps into Mariota. No hands, no arms, no helmet, no nothing. Bumps into him, standing straight upright. Mariota flops. Flag. That's the viral clip that you probably didn't see, but it happened in the game as well. Meanwhile, in Minnesota, Justin Fields had a spectacular 52-yard touchdown run that was called back by Amir Smith-Marset, wide receiver for Chicago, who had one hand in front of Cameron Dantzler, but otherwise knew that Dantzler was about to flop, and so he pulls his hands back to go, hey, you know, I am kind of blocking him, but I'm not going to get a penalty here because I can see that Fields is about to go ham and go to the house. Well, that's when Dantzler gives a flop LeBron would be proud of. And this is now one of the sad truths about the NFL. In addition to replay, fucking up this league beyond all hope. In addition to the concussion rules doing the same. In addition to the ticky-tack, oh, don't even look at the quarterback anymore rules. Flopping is now a thing in the NFL, a certified, bona fide thing. Players are getting savvy on how to do it. They know they're getting calls, and it's not going to stop. So the scourge that started, the cancer on fair play and sport that started in soccer that then metastasized to basketball and has gone completely off the rails in the NBA has now come to football. And I don't know what can be done other than telling referees, do not under any circumstances reward guys who flop. Be on the lookout for flopping. Then there's this. What's the appropriate song to come out the tunnel to if you are recovering from being shot? Because Brian Robinson did that for the Washington Commanders, and he used the song Many Men, parentheses, Wish Death, from my favorite rapper, by the way, 50 Cent. 50, but I like In the Club, which is kind of benign. It's like, In the Club, yeah, I'm in the club. Okay, sweet, cool. Many Men, parentheses, Wish Death, has more graphic lyrics. Like, many men wish death upon me, blood in my eye, dog, and I can't see. I'm trying to be what I'm destined to be, and ends trying to take my life away. Come on, put a hole in up for fucking with me. My back on the wall, now you gonna see. Better watch how you talk when you talk about me, because I'll come and take your life away. Many men, many men, many, many, many men wish death upon me. Lord, don't cry no more, blah, 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 blah. And it goes on and on. Now, look, I'm not saying you should have come out to Everything is Awesome from the Lego Movie, or, you know, some kind of Kumbaya Hold My Hand song. But I just don't know if the rap songs that embody the rough inner city upbringing, from which I don't know if Brian Robinson actually came up in that or not, is the appropriate thing for a guy who nearly was killed from some young punk wanting to steal his car because he knew that he drove a nice car. Like, what is the appropriate etiquette on this? Is that right? Are you not furthering the sort of stereotype and the culture of, okay, well, you know, you better watch your back. I'm going to get you now because you tried to kill me and you didn't get me. I'm still here standing. That all sounds tough and well, but the Redskins had a guy who was shot in his home by a guy who wanted to rob him. He's dead. His name is Sean Taylor. He would have gone straight to Canton had he lived and played a full career, which is really just hard to think about now still. So I don't know, man. I do not know. But I'm glad Brian Robinson is back. It's an amazing comeback. Very, very lucky as well that those two bullets went through his leg and didn't hit anything vital. 37 days, I believe the number was, from the time he was shot to the time he came back and played on an NFL field. How about the game-winning kick from Justin Tucker, the best kicker in the NFL, maybe the best kicker who has ever kicked an oblong leather spheroid in Roger Goodell's traveling circus? I'm willing to say that he is. Obviously, Vinatieri has more big-time, big-game kicks. But in terms of leg and accuracy and just being a complete and total weapon, I mean, nothing beats Justin Tucker. And there was a kick in the game in which young Money Mac for Cincinnati kicked an extra point over the top of the upright. Now, this is always an interesting thing because you can't use replay to analyze was that in or out if it goes over the top. They wrote that in specifically because they know that you would spend hours looking at a kick to go, wait a minute, is that in? I can't. When does it go over? And as far as I understand it, here's the way the rule works. Unless the inside of the football is clear of the outside edge of the goalpost, it's in. So in other words, if any part of the ball crosses the top of the goalpost extended, it's in. Sort of like in tennis, if one little smudge or slice of the tennis ball catches a part of the line, it's in. At least that's what I was led to believe. I may be wrong about that. Don't quote me. Or the answer was if any part of the outside edge of the ball was outside the outside edge of the goalpost, then it's no good. That may be the case. If that was the case, it looked like McPherson's extra point was no good. Well, why don't we just make the uprights taller? Okay. Well, the answer is quite simply they already have twice. And once was because of Tucker himself. The uprights are now 35 feet tall. That's on top of being 10 feet off the ground, which the crossbar is. And it used to be 30 feet. Now it's 35 because there's a game in 2012, a playoff game in which Tucker's 27-yard field goal went over the top. Belichick and the Patriots swore he missed it. The referee said it was good. And so they said, all right, we'll add 5 more feet. Why don't you make them 45 feet tall? Well, they're already so fucking heavy. And these goalposts have to both be able to be straight, that they have to withstand high winds, especially in Buffalo, amongst other places. And they have to stay upright and straight. And you add more to that, it's going to become very difficult to handle. This company, SSI, that does the goalposts, said basically, we're already at the limits engineering-wise of being able to make them tall enough and have them be feasible. Kickers are just too good. Now, you could put a crossbar across the top and say you got to kick it through. That would kind of be stupid, though. I don't like that. Others have said, how about lasers? Which is everyone's answer to everything, isn't it? Like for first downs, how about lasers? We could use lasers. Okay, so a laser shoots into the air. How do you know if the ball hit it? Well, it would have an electronic sensor. Okay, sure about that? What if the wind is blowing the goalpost and it's leaning? It leans one way right at the last second. Is it lasers? But I love Justin Tucker's answer about, you know, making the kick. He said, very much deflecting to his teammates, I'm a system kicker. Take a load of this. Get a load of this answer.
I mean, I love it and I hate it and everything in between. It's, I'd be lying to you if I said every time I go out there, I'm not just a little bit nervous. You know, I'm not thinking about, you know, worst case scenario, but it's really important to me and to us to take, you know, those 1.3 seconds between the snap, the hold, and the kick, and just focus on the nuts and bolts of what's going to make the kick. And my feelings don't matter. What matters is seeing the ball snapped with 12 o'clock laces from Nick Moore, seeing the ball spotted cleanly from Jordan Stout, his first career game-winning hold. And then from there, I'm just a system kicker. The ball kicks itself at that point.
No, it doesn't.
All we're really thinking about is those things that are going to make the kick. All the feelings and stuff, we can enjoy them after the fact.
I love that. What a weapon. What a kicker. Amazing. And this kid for Arizona, Amendola, I messed up his name yesterday with Andy on the podcast. He missed the game winner, and one of his teammates waited at his locker to defend him, saying, you know, you guys are all waiting to talk to him, and he's going to speak because he's a stand-up guy, but this is a team game, all right? We could have done a lot to win the game before this. You can't just come in and ask for one guy to say, why didn't you make the kick, and you messed up, and that's why we lost the game. I like that. That was good support of a teammate. Although I have no idea why he hit such a bad slice like that. Who knows? There's one Justin Tucker, and then there is everybody else. Matt Rhule is out in Carolina. I would say it's well-deserved. I don't know exactly what he did wrong there. He's had shit quarterbacks and Baker Mayfield, who I thought was going to be pretty good. Now that he's healthy, and he's not healthy, he's hurt again with his ankle. He won't start this week. I mean, he's had what? Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. I think there's a couple others in the mix as well. Seems like a very smart, pleasant, affable guy that dealt nicely with the media. He's going to go back to college where he was kicking ass at Baylor before he took this gig and probably resume kicking ass in college. But he's due $40 million. There is some offset language in there, so he won't just get to double dip on David Tepper's money, but I think he'll do all right in college when it's all said and done. So if you add him as your first NFL coach fired, cash that ticket. Winner, winner, Matt Rhule dinner. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job post seen on other sites, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. Want to know how fast Indeed really is? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. The drive to basketball championships, the grind of raising the cup in hockey. From the court to the ice, today's elite athletes know success depends on having the right team behind them. Same goes for protecting your family's financial future. Select Quotes licensed agents are your all-star team for finding customized, affordable life insurance that scores big on coverage and savings. Select Quote has nearly 40 years of experience helping 2 million customers find over $700 billion in coverage. Other brokers offer one-size-fits-all policies that might cost more and cover less. Select Quote's agents work for you to tailor the right policy in just 15 minutes. Worried about health conditions? Select Quote partners with carriers covering high blood pressure, diabetes, and even heart disease. No major health issues, get same-day coverage with no medical exam. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com slash Zabe. That's selectquote.com/Zabe today to get started. Selectquote.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Select quote, they shop, you save. You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. Okay, my friend and golf buddy, Steve Halligan, who is a member at the fabulous Caves Valley Country Club, Golf Club, in Baltimore, Maryland, outside of Baltimore, Maryland, father of nine, owner and CEO of a tech company in the DC, DMV, Baltimore area, and just a great dude, very good golfer, but now has become this pickleball evangelist. I mean, to the point where he's like, you want to come out and play? Okay, come on, come on and play. Let's go play. He dragged me out to Hillendale Country Club in Phoenix, Maryland, after dark when we were done playing at Caves, to play some pickleball, where we sat with his friend and former D1 tennis player at Wake Forest, Sonny Tannen, T-A-N-N-A-N, a wounded United States Marine who is now a pickleball instructor and a ranked player. And I played some pickleball, and we talked some pickleball, and I found it very interesting. So if you ever were pickleball curious, here was our conversation about this fast-growing sport.
Welcome to the Minto U.S. Open Pickleball Championships, powered by Margaritaville, one of the beautiful vacation destinations in our great country, Naples, Florida. Incredible beaches, white sugary sands, and did you know, Naples also the pickleball capital of the world, because 1 week a year, it's the largest pickleball party here at this event. Tonight's day seven. We've got men's and women's doubles pro. Great to have you with us, everybody. Drew Felios, Melissa McCurley from PickleballTournaments.com, and there's also Chad Edwards out of Peak Performance.
Here we are. It is a beautiful fall night, and we are at Hillendale Country Club. Is that right?
That's correct.
Hillendale. In Phoenix, Maryland.
You've got it.
I got to tell you, I've never been here in my life. This is north of Baltimore, about what?
Maybe 5 miles north of Baltimore City.
Yeah. 20 minutes, you said, which was 45 in real time.
Well, I wanted to show minutes, you the...
You couldn't tell me 45 and say, no way, I'm going home. So 20 it was. But we're here, though, and that's all that matters. And it is a pickleball fest here on the hard courts at Hillendale Country Club. And you have been the biggest evangelist for this sport. Sport!
Absolutely. Halligan. Absolutely.
Not game, not hobby, sport. That I've ever known, and I'm going to learn about it now.
Well, you have an opportunity to learn from one of the best, Sonny Tannen, here.
All right, introduce our guest here on the set.
Well, I'll as I had Sonny Tannen, who was one of the guys who I first took some lessons from and got engaged in the pickleball community that's pretty tight-knit but growing rapidly,
yeah.
And it's full of great people that
right.
That are having fun, being healthy, like to compete. As I told you earlier, we like to play hit them in the throat pickleball. Sonny
throat.
Sonny will teach the right ways to make sure you understand the strategy and the shot selections and all of the scenarios around the sport to make sure that you're more successful.
Sonny, welcome aboard. Thank you for coming tonight. Tell me your backstory.
Right. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And just like you, I've never been here before either. So
okay.
I'm glad I didn't ask Steve how far it was.
How far away do you live?
I live about 55 minutes from here. So I'm in Howard County, a little bit closer than Northern Virginia.
That's all right, though. I'm out here, and I'm glad to be out here.
Absolutely.
So. What is your athletic background?
Yep. So my athletic background is my first sport was soccer. So I grew up playing soccer. I played soccer in college.
Where?
And then, I played at UNC.
All right.
And then I played tennis at Wake Forest. So tennis was my primary
Wait,
sport.
What?
Yeah, I changed schools quite a bit. I didn't like to stay in one place.
So you played soccer at Carolina, tennis at Wake.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So it's been an interesting journey for
Which
me.
Which were you better at?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I excelled at soccer more, but I think tennis I probably had a little bit more fun
okay.
with it. I wasn't the best, I'll be honest with you, but I had a good time playing those sports.
Okay, so where do you stand as a tennis player on this growing sport of pickleball?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. So I actually found pickleball because I got injured. So I got injured on a deployment in the Marine Corps, so I had to give up playing tennis.
Wow.
So I found pickleball at a local YMCA. My favorite story is...
What was your injury?
So there's a couple different things, but the ones I can share, my wrists, my back, and a little bit of my leg.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay. But here I am playing a sport that my body can handle.
That's fantastic. Okay. Yeah. So you got into pickleball.
Yes, sir.
What year?
Let's see. It's 22 right now. So probably about 2018.
Okay.
End of 2017. So I was walking through my local YMCA, heard the pop, 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 and I said, what the heck is that? That's it. Stuck my head into the gym, and there was a gentleman giving some pickleball lessons to some ladies. They look like they're having a great time. We got to know each other, and that's how I got into pickleball.
How'd you get into pickleball?
Similar story. I was playing racquetball for 20 years. I played some tennis recreationally, and a guy introduced me to the sport who started pretty early, like 2012. He's like,
yeah.
you guys got to get a hang of this. And we played once and said, okay, you know, just kind of goofing around, having fun. And I said, you know what? This is a sport that would be really fun to get good at. And I introduced to my brother-in-laws. We play at the beach. There's just a lot of camaraderie and trash talking. And then I decided in probably 2020, I said, you know what? I want to get a little better at this sport. And I started to get to know people that taught, that played at high levels, that cared more about it. And it's just a whole lot of fun at every level, really, from beginners to very high-level competition.
So, Sonny, when I derisively, jokingly, just of course, call it slow tennis, what do you think of that?
I think everybody's entitled to their opinions.
Okay.
I think the best thing, Steve said this, is it's sport for anybody. So I think the best way to kind of reframe what your thoughts are on pickleball is just to get out on a court. Just get out on a court and hit the ball around. One of our buddies just mentioned it's like hitting a wiffle ball around, right? So come out here and hit this weighted wiffle ball. Get a taste for yourself. Have some fun with it.
I know the sport is growing like crazy. I understand the endorsement dollars that are in it for people that play the game. I know that the equipment like this racket I'm holding, is it a racket or a paddle?
It's a paddle.
This paddle I'm holding, this Jula, you said this doesn't exist?
So this particular Yola paddle, actually, it launches, I believe, either next week or 2 weeks.
Oh, it's called Yola.
Yola, yes, sir. So it's actually it's the signature paddle of one of our fairly new endorsers, Simone Jardim. And so this is her particular paddle that will be launching very soon.
It's how much does this retail for, or
that,
will it?
That's a great question. I don't know what the marketing team has put out there
all
yet.
All right, what does a typical high-end pickleball paddle?
Great question. So that particular paddle is based off of our marquee player, the number one player in the world, Ben Johns, and his paddle currently retails for $220.
$220?
Yeah.
What's in this?
It's
just a paddle.
You know, there's paddles that range anywhere from mine is I bought my first paddle, buy one, get one free, like Steve. It was a $30 paddle. I gave one to my brother. But, you know, there's paddles that as low as, you know, $25-$30, and there's some that are as high as like over $300.
All right. I will say the surface feels to be a very specific, very finely manufactured textured surface.
Yeah, the group that's put it together, they call themselves paddle geeks or paddle engineers. They are very good at what they do. There's a lot of thought that's put into these paddles.
Is this for spin?
As a combination of things.
Combination.
Yes, sir. But the most popular is power, spin, control. Okay. Those are the big ones that are.
Are there regulations on the paddle?
There are. So on there it says that it's USA pickleball approved. So there is a governing board that does check the paddles and
to make sure they're not illegal, not too juiced up.
Yes, sir.
Okay, fantastic. So what are we going to learn today about pickleball? How do you get good at pickleball?
Well, I think you can enjoy it, not so you want to learn the lessons, right? So we're going to teach you a little bit about just the setup of a game. And we'll get out and probably play. You'll learn how to score. You'll learn the flow of a game in 5 minutes, if that. But we'll also go through some things about how to play, maybe not like tennis, maybe hitting the right strategy of a shot. And I would say optimally is try to keep it in play, and you'll have a lot of fun as you'll see guys laughing and goofing around with their buddies.
It's a double sport, right? Is there singles pickleball? Yes.
There is, yeah. So traditionally, you'll see probably 90% at the recreational level played in doubles, but okay. There is singles. And to Steve's point, you know, the two biggest things about this sport, it's fun, it's social. And honestly speaking, getting out there, hitting the ball, getting just the sense of it, you know, any age, any demographic,
so
any
singles is not the most popular form. It's sort of the subgenre.
Not necessarily true. It depends on you. Because okay. You remember the last couple of years we were just stuck, you know, indoors, COVID
sure,
got hit.
Sure.
And singles all of a sudden became quite popular because you knew who you could play with safely.
Exactly.
So I would say it's more popular now than it was a couple of years ago probably.
All right. Why don't we go hit a few and then we'll come right back here and then you can say, okay, here's what you need to work on. Here's what's okay with you right now. And a few tips.
Sounds like a plan.
I think we got to put a question back to you first.
Yes,
though,
please
sir.
Do.
I think we got to say, what do you think your first experience will be? So that way when we come back, we can ask you that same question. So what was your experience? What's your expectation?
I'm sure I'm going to suck at it, but that's okay. I don't mind it. You know, first time you do anything, you're not going to be very good. But maybe I'll get hooked. Maybe I'll get addicted. I'm a golfer. Every minute I get to golf, I want to play golf. Halligan is like, yeah, I like to golf, and he's good at it, but he's become Mr. Picklehead. He loves his time out here.
You'll like it. And, Steve, one of the things I'd say is from people who've never played any racket sport, people who are unathletic, they come out and they get a group of friends in a similar skill range. But they're, I would say most of the more accomplished players have really come from many other sports, right? There's a bunch of ex-tennis players, but as Sonny said, it wasn't even his strongest sport. But basketball guys, baseball players, hockey guys, a bunch of lax guys, there's and ladies. It's just one of those things that having good athletic balance and
right.
skill and hand-eye coordination and people who want to understand the strategy really can get better quicker. And you'll learn a little bit of that tonight. And I know you're going to have a good time.
All right, let's go. Let's go figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. All right, we are back, Mr. Halligan, Sonny. Wow, I'm exhausted.
So do you remember the question that we left with?
Which was?
How good did you think you were going to be?
You know, I hit some shots, but I hit a lot of dinkers, a lot of stupid shots. Now, when you get better, how many times will you hit a dumb shot that barely doesn't even get over the net?
I don't know if I got this from Sonny, but as one of the things in teaching people and just around is the rule number one and 1A in pickleball is just keep the ball in play.
Well, of course, yeah. That's how you get good at table tennis. You know, I had buddies, you know, growing up, like Alan Abbasi, my next door neighbor. He never missed a shot. He was always in play. It was so infuriating. It's like playing against a wall. Didn't have any great shots. You just couldn't get him to mess up.
And sometimes you'll see that one where it's just a pop-up. You want to kill it, and all of a sudden, you know, and you should, but it's you blow it past and blow it out of the court, and you're just thankful,
for,
you know, that your opponent did it to you.
So one thing I learned, Sonny, was that smashing it while satisfying is not always the best shot because the ball only reaches a certain terminal velocity and doesn't get much faster than that. So if your opponents are not uptight and they're back a little bit, most smashes can be got to.
I would agree with
that. Is that fair enough?
Yeah.
The second thing I learned is that, oh, you better learn spin, baby. You better learn to recognize it. You better respect it. These little dink shots that got a lot of spin on them like that, your pad will go right over it. You'll be like, oh, my God, what happened?
Yeah.
So,
but, you know, for the first time playing and the fact that you didn't know how a ball might bounce, how you
right.
might hit the ball, I mean, being able to recognize that so early on and soon, I mean, that's a great observation. Now it's just about executing and practicing how to handle
yeah.
that.
Hey, keep it down over there.
And, Steve, your lifetime 1-0 in pickleball.
Yes, with a world-ranked player. Sonny, what is your world ranking?
I don't believe I'm ranked worldwide.
You're not?
No.
How about ranked in the state of Maryland?
In the region, according to Duper, I believe I'm currently 38 or 39.
Not bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that in singles or in doubles?
That's cumulative.
Cumulative.
Singles and doubles.
How do they rate somebody that only plays doubles? Because you don't know if it's them or their partner, right?
That's so true, and there's a bunch of different rankings, so there's no real one good way to do it, and there's also different tournaments, so they all have different ratings. There's a global rating, so it's a little bit more fragmented than we'd like to think.
Okay. So where's the sport going? You just had yesterday the announcement that one LeBron James purchased a professional pickleball team, right?
They did, in a Major League Pickleball.
MLP.
MLP. I think they went to Sonny, an expansion draft from 12 to 16 teams, I think. Or
that's correct.
To 12, yeah, yes, 12 to 16. Mm-hmm. So Drew Brees owns a team. A lot of private equity and other people that are involved with the sport are
what does a team cost? You're buying the players, right?
So that's
you're buying the talented players, and they're making a now salary, right?
Well, you're buying a team, and then you're drafting players. So you might not necessarily keep the same team. So, for example, I think the last if it's been running for 3 years, the last three teams that have won, they have pretty similar, but they have a draft where they've traded players. So they may have dropped some. They might have added some.
And how many players on the team?
I believe they have two male and two female, so that they have a gender competition, so male-male, and then female-female, and then mixed also. And then there's a dream breaker, so there's a special event if there's a tiebreaker at the end.
Oh, wow.
But to answer your question about the cost, I'll be attending my first MLP just as a guest in a couple of weeks, so I'll ask that question and get some info for you and follow back up.
No, I'm not shopping for one, but thank you very much, Sonny. So is there a competing league to MLP?
There's one that has come out one time. I believe it's called Selkirk Labs. That's run with another partnership. There's two major tours currently, APP and PPA. And PPA I would use the word partnership. They use Selkirk Labs, and then APP is partnered mostly with
Selkirk
MLP.
Labs. What?
So, yeah. Steve, I might give you a tennis analogy where people play on the tennis on the pro tennis tour, and they play majors and minors. But there was also World Team Tennis, right? So in D.C., the Washington Castles, owned by Mark Eyne, that was more of, and there were different six or eight different teams around the country, and they would have male and female, and they would do different team events, and they would go head to head, and it made very good television. You got a chance to see your favorite pros in a little bit of a different environment. I think the professionals enjoy it. As just a different way to compete and to be part of their sport. So I think that MLP is very similar to World Team Tennis, whereas the main leagues, I think the two main leagues are the PPA and the APP. They're still, they're still kind of working through, who's got the right players.
You gave me three sets of alphabet letters. I'm now confused. So as to how they work. Are they three separate tours?
Two tours.
And then what's MLP?
Major League Pickleball, which is this team style event.
So it's a team style event, whereas the other two are individual or two person type deals.
Correct. You're trying to win money or a medal. So yeah, you're competing for your team.
How many tour events are there per year per circuit?
That's changing. That's ever changing.
10, 20, 50.
Great question. I believe.
Ballpark. Hey, that's a softball to talk about. The D.C. Open.
ding, ding, ding.
Thank you, Zay. So I think the Integrate D.C. Open that's coming in October is the 20th event of the PPA. And the PPA has done a great job in locking in a lot of the best players with appearance fees and commitments to play a number of events. So right when that event got started, the world's best were some of the first that filled in and made commitments to come to the first pickleball event in the DMV.
All right. Okay, and that's going to be held where?
It's going to be held at the JTCC. That probably
got letters.
Got a little more.
What
got a little
the
more
JTCC?
Junior Tennis Championship
Center.
Probably.
Where is it at?
It's right down the street from University of Maryland. So Francis Tiafoe, who beat Nadal. He grew up training in this. Professional tennis training center that's probably similar to like a Bollettieri, IMG, if you're familiar, where a lot of the American tennis players were trained.
Right.
And so it has, some of the best tennis players go through these training academies. And it's going to be converted to 30 pickleball courts. There's going to be some indoor courts, some outdoor courts. They're going to have a stadium court where the best will get those slots and have an opportunity to
So it seems like I can tell it's a great participation sport. It's very co-edible. It's all ages. It's for people who might have injuries. It's for athletes that want to compete at something other than golf. Okay. But who would come watch pickleball in person? Has to be only pickleball players. And then who's going to watch on television? I know that there's some maybe televised events, or probably a lot of it's online, YouTube and other online channels.
So I'll hit that one. Tennis Channel, I think some of the most popular programming on the Tennis Channel is pickleball. crazy enough.
That must burn the Tennis Channel's ass. You well, know it must.
I think
it must absolutely drive them crazy.
There is a heavy YouTube for a lot of the events. Right. However, that business arrangement is great news in the DC tournament, and October 21st to the 24th will be CBS Sports is picking up championship Sunday for a couple hours.
All right.
And I think they get 750,000, a million viewers. They've done it a couple other times. So it's getting some very good national coverage and getting out of the niche-y cornhole type thing.
I was going to say, do you feel like you need to break away from these other picnic games? Because some might look at pickleball and think, oh, that's cute. It's a picnic game.
I would say, Sonny, you answer that one because you've seen some of the best play.
Yeah, I think if you experience it live, same thing. Like when we put you on the court and you actually experience it and you get to put your hands on a paddle or a ball, I think it's different. So to answer your original question, you know, who's attending it? I think, yes, there's definitely pickleball, the diehards or the fans or the recreational player that get just as close to one of the top players in the world. I mean, there's something to be said.
Sure.
There's not a lot of other
to watch, absorb, sports. And appreciate how good they are, how quick they are.
Yep.
How crafty they are.
Yeah, and in live, in anything, live versus TV, I mean, it's a whole other dimension. Sure. But I do think, so to get away from the picnic or the crafty or the cornhole games, I think there's more to it than that. And once again, it comes back to what Steve just said, is every age can play it. So, you know, you've got players right now on the tour that are as young as 8 years old, and there's even divisions of 70-plus-year-olds. I mean, just imagine that.
Right,
what other sport?
There's no other sport on the
that
planet.
You can do that. So I don't think it's so much niche, but on the flip side, I mean, what other sport can bring together that those types of generations in a fun-filled and competitive you know, sporting venue?
Is pickleball a threat to tennis?
I think that any sport can coexist. And I think that it's just another dimension, another racket sport that players can play. For example, right here at this club, you know, we had the director of rackets saying, I've got kids coming from my junior tennis programs picking up a paddle over here, just having a blast. And who's on the other side? Mom and dad. And they're sitting there and they're talking smack and saying, hey, go home and do your homework. We're done playing. So, I mean, it's, I don't think it's a threat to it. I think it's just something
else. What does tennis think, though, Sonny?
I'm sure that because of, you see, we're on tennis courts. I think shared space is the challenge. So when you have something that's taken from you and given to somebody else, I think tennis players see it like that. And coming from a tennis background,
you're a tennis guy, yeah.
I think that if you look at it like that, it could be seen as competition or something being taken from you. But
what about tennis's envy or jealousy that there's so much sizzle?
I can tell you I have plenty of students and players that play both sports, my dad included, where he now plays 6 days a week after being retired, and he competes in tennis and he competes in pickleball, and he says, I've got my group of friends with this, I've got my group of friends with this, I'm okay with both of them. So I think for some it can coexist.
Okay.
Some of them you still have that mentality of, I'm going to play tennis till I fall over.
So
you're never going to make everybody happy.
I thought playing pickleball for the first time, I don't think you can play tennis and pickleball because it would mess you up in terms of how you swing the racket or the paddle and the spin and the contact and everything. But I guess players obviously do, right?
Well, I think the answer is yes,
they
but
adjust.
I think it's how you approach it also. Remember, the two biggest things about this sport, it's fun, it's social. So imagine you've got something, you guys just came from golfing, you've got something you do with a group of friends. Who's to say you can't use the same group of friends or another group of friends to play this other sport?
No, I know, but I'm saying a top tennis player that plays pickleball, I can't be good for his tennis game.
So now you're getting into you're getting into the elite, right? So the 0.1 percenters, maybe they can't.
Oh, okay.
But the majority of pickleball players are just like
how about
you,
just a good average club tennis player?
Yeah, I think you can play both sports
you
and
do.
Excel at them. But I think if you want to, just like in anything else in life, if you want to get really good at something, then you have to focus on that one thing and just hone your craft.
I think a lot of people, Steve, that come from tennis, when they may have this issue like, oh, these guys are taking my real estate. When they play, the thing about pickleball, it is really, really fun to play. It's just the
you're saying tennis is not fun?
No, tennis is fun, but when you're standing 14 feet away from somebody,
it's more visceral.
You have quick points that it's just a lot of fun. And tennis players who give it a try, they're like, wow, that is pretty darn fun. And you can, you know, it's also age and gender independent, where you have kids playing with their grandparents and can play as competitively. You have males and females, different ages that have an opportunity to play. And when you're in that same skill level, it it's just a blast.
Well, one thing that Steve said while we were golfing, Sonny, was that, you know, we can have some cocktails while playing pickleball. And that's probably
that sounds like Steve.
Very true. And I said, you know, that's brilliant because you can't have cocktails and play tennis. I mean, you can, but you're just asking to vomit.
You might
because
have it afterwards.
You're going to run too much.
Right.
And so pickleball hits that sweet spot for middle-aged, overweight guys like me and Steve that want to have a drink and maybe some wings and do something competitive in addition to golf. Golf takes 5 hours. Pickleball takes an hour, if that.
So are you saying if I'm not middle-aged and overweight, I can't enjoy
cocktails
and
wings? No, you play that.
He burns it off quicker.
I'm just saying our type of creature, Sonny, it's what we seek every day.
Well, shout out to the Annapolis crew that hits it very hard in pickleball and has a lot of fun in cocktails on Saturdays. I don't often get to do that. But
how's tennis doing? Be honest.
In terms of just
participation?
I think, once again, if we go back to the last couple of years, so COVID shut down a lot of things. I think tennis is probably had a nice bounce back from that. I think it's just as popular for a couple of reasons. A lot of juniors, so as a dad of two young ones, it's trying to find something that's maybe a safer sport or something that's easy to pick up.
Right.
Tennis, I think, has made a nice rebound. And I do think it's still quite popular. I think where you might not kind of see the optic of it is you've got pickleball that has just grown leaps and bounds in the last few years. And it's been around since 1965. It's only been in the last probably 9 to 10 years that it's just completely exploded on the scene.
How about racquetball? You said you used to play. How's racquetball doing?
Not so great, I would say.
It's not much of a thing anymore?
1983 was a great year for racquetball.
What happened?
I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed it and had probably one of the largest racquetball clubs in Maryland I'd play at for 20 years.
Right.
COVID really blew it up. They shut down the gym.
Well, yeah, you're in a hot box.
And you know what's interesting, though, about that is that all of the guys I played with and knew forever picked up pickleball, and lots of them didn't come back. I mean, I'd say 75% of them
didn't
go back.
What about squash, which I never played but was like a close cousin, the weird cousin to racquetball?
Squash is a ton of fun. My first pickleball tournament I played with, I think, the number 7 squash player in the world. We got paired up, and he was unbelievable, just the skill. I don't know how well it's doing relative to, you know, growth and participation.
Right.
I
don't think anyone plays it much anymore.
Yeah,
it was always a niche thing. Racquetball was more common. I played that a little bit for a period there. Never played squash, though. I think what somebody should do, Sonny, is create a special tournament and declare a king of all rackets where you play squash, racquetball, pickleball, and tennis.
I think
and ping pong.
How about throwing badminton?
Badminton, paddle tennis. You've got a lot of
paddle tennis. There's paddle. You
have a great
Wait
idea,
a
but there's
minute.
A lot of racket
Hold
sports
on.
And
okay,
paddle sports
I will
out there.
Allow badminton, but paddle tennis is dead. That's called like deck tennis, right? Some clubs would have that small court that was raised that would be used in the winter.
Absolutely. Right. Warming huts.
I mean, this sport had to have killed paddle tennis, right?
There's Bethesda Country Club just put in 2 new paddle tennis courts.
Well, okay, so it still exists.
Oh, yeah.
Like duck pin bowling.
Now you're in Baltimore, you're talking
candlepin bowling.
That's a Vermont. Yep. You know all sorts of these.
I grew up playing tennis. I wanted to be Jimmy Connors at the Tuckahoe Swim Club, tennis club. I took lessons indoors in the winter. And then one day, Sonny, I told my mother, I'm done with tennis. And she was like, what? What do you mean you're done with it? I go, I'm tired of it. I don't want to play it anymore. She had spent all this time, all this money, lessons, rackets, etc. An impetuous 12-year-old me said, I'm done with it. So they didn't force me. They figured it was going to be a losing effort.
Well, Xavier, we'll get you out a couple more times playing pickle with a crew that...
This has been a great education. I'll end with this. What is one thing, just one thing, Sonny, and you too, that worries you about pickleball? You say we got to keep our eye on this to make sure the sport doesn't get derailed. You first, Sonny, then you, Steve.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think with all of the interested parties that are out there right now, there's never going to be, I think, one path that everybody's going to want to go down. And I think that the folks that are impacting, so you mentioned, you know, the LeBron MLP announcement. I think having the right people backing the sport and doing it in a way that's meaningful, that kind of touches the masses, is going to be really important. Can it be done? I'm not too sure. But I think the one biggest challenge for pickleball is, you know, do we have a vision for where we want it to go,
right,
and where we want it to end up, and are we going to get there?
Yeah. So. Steve?
Yeah, I guess thinking about that, with things in golf, with LIV Tour that has different team events and maybe some different formats and functions, I think trying to find that right formula, because you're right, maybe it's not the best TV sport. I think it's – I enjoy watching it. I don't spend enough time doing so. But finding the thing that things like Major League Pickleball, where you have these competitions – to keep people more interested. But I think the groundswell, the celebrities, the pro athletes and others that are some of the big money in private equity, I mean, it's got this amazing trajectory right now. Yeah. And, you know, hope it has the right format for television and even broader mass media.
Someday we'll have to take a pilgrimage to the original pickleball court in Washington. I saw the feature on ESPN where the pickleball fanatics go. And to pay homage. And they let people come up to this house with the court in the front yard amongst the tall evergreens, the pine needles on the court itself, and they get to play a little bit. And it's like they went to the holy ground. It's a beautiful thing.
I love it.
I love that. All right. Thanks, boys. It's been fun. Let's go play a little bit more, then I'm going home.
I understand. Thanks,
Sounds
Steve.
Yep. Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate you.
So I don't know if pickleball is going to be for me, but I appreciate the sweet spots that the sport hits. It's competitive. But it's a big tent. It's a big tent for all ages, all sexes, all abilities. Good for disabled individuals. Good for special needs individuals. It can be very competitive if you want. And that's why there are world-ranked pickleball players who play at an insanely fast pace. It's on ESPN and YouTube and whatnot. But it can also be played, honestly, with a drink in your hand after a round of golf if you wanted to play a more relaxed game. So that's a brilliant thing. And it gets people out on tennis courts, which at a lot of places, honestly, are not really being used. We shall see if I become a pickleball head. Sonny, by the way, has a website, sonnytannen.com. That's SONNYTANNAN.com if you want more information. We'll end on this. Hey, PayPal. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
This story is incredible. Dateline Reuters. PayPal Holdings Incorporated said on Monday it will not fine users for misinformation and that an earlier policy update for users of their money handling app or whatever they call it said that customers could have had to have paid up to $2,500 in damages if they were to forward misinformation. The CEO said that the policy was sent in error. Oh, yeah. Whoops. Right. Shares of the San Jose, California-based company were down nearly 6% after the update, which PayPal said included some incorrect information, sparking intense backlash on social media over the weekend. PayPal is not fining people for misinformation. This language was never intended to be inserted into our policy. Yeah, but it was out there, and somebody saw it, and they go, what the fuck exactly is this?
What are you doing?
To paraphrase the meme of, sir, this is a Wendy's. PayPal, hello. You're there to safely and securely handle monetary exchanges of moderate value between individuals as gifts or as a way to pay for something. You know, there's a lot of other services out there now. Venmo, Cash App, you name it, on down the list, Apple Pay. What are you doing with this? PayPal had published a policy updating prohibited customers from using its services for activities identified by it as sending, posting, or publication of any messages, content, or materials promoting misinformation. The new policy said customers could have to pay damages of up to $2,500
per violation and was supposed to go in effect November 3rd. PayPal's former president, David Marcus, slammed the policy in a tweet on Saturday saying the new policy, quote, goes against everything I believe in. Quote, a private company now gets to decide to take your money if you say something they disagree with? Insanity.
What are you doing?
No shit. Elon Musk, who is in the process of buying Twitter, tweeted simply, agreed. So in other words, PayPal's like, oh, never mind. Yeah, that was put in error. No, we never meant to do that. Like, it was, we might have talked about it, but no, we're not doing that. It was misinformation itself, wasn't it? Maybe PayPal should fine itself $2,500. I know this. I have a PayPal account. I don't know if there's much money in it anymore because I believe eBay, which used to be the one place that I would catch my, you know, PayPal is the one place I caught my eBay money from. I believe they changed their policy. So now I think my eBay money goes right into my bank account. And I can guarantee you, I don't care if they've retracted this policy. PayPal, you're done. I'm going with a more trusted, non-Orwellian financial exchange service called HeyPal. Hey, pal, I owe you that money. You got it for me, don't you? Right. Okay. Knock, knock. Where's my money? And with that, we're done for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for keeping an open mind about things like pickleball on a Tuesday in the middle of football season. But I wanted to get it out there because I had a good time playing. And maybe you, too, have some thoughts upon it. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow, back to more footballs. We are in the meat of the week, headed towards week 6, and a blockbuster college football weekend coming up as well. It'll be our Tuesday power lunch from the Palm in Tyson's Corner. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time.
Keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You know football and you pick winners all the time. So why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half $1 million to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit mybookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sportsbook that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.